Welcome to the Paranormal Pendle podcast, coming to you from the heart of Pendle witch country in the northwest of England. My name is Craig Bryant, author, investigator and collector of stories. Join me as we take a journey into the paranormal, UFO sightings, cryptozoology and big cats. This is the Paranormal Pendle podcast. Okay, so hello and welcome to episode 49 of Paranormal Pendle, broadcasting to the Paranormal UK Radio Network at pauk.radio.com. So my guest on this episode, and I'm absolutely delighted, it's with great pleasure that I welcome Steve Mira. Steve, thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you, Craig. Thank you for having me. Always glad to help.
No problem. I must admit, I did a little bit of reading up on you before today, and I don't think I've ever come across such an impressive bio. I mean, I really don't know where to start. I suppose, really, how did you become interested in all the sort of work that you've done over the years?
I think I started at an early age. My father had a collection of books. I think the first book I picked out, which I was really interested in, was Eric von Daniken's Chariots of the Gods. You know, so when my kind of friends at school were reading comics, I was reading Eric von Daniken. And I kind of got interested. I depleted my father's books, of course, after that, because I was interested in Brad Steiger and Inside UFO. And then I kind of took it from there, really, and that's how I got my interest.
So have you had any UFO experiences yourself? Let's talk about UFOs first. Have you had any?
Do you mean prior to being an investigator or through the process of being an investigative researcher?
Well, prior, really, and then obviously through the process of.
Sure. I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I came into the subject, you could say, not only just through because of interest, because I was just an experiencer since the age of 7 years of age. Yeah. So, yeah, I had a multitude of various different types of phenomena. Most people will tell you that those people that have early experiences from the age of 7 or 8 years of age onwards usually fizzes out in the late teens. Mine didn't, so they still continue. I think I've attributed to that, though, through the power, you know, through investigation and research over the years. Sometimes we take our work home with us, you know, it's just unavoidable sometimes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just as much as part of my life, really. I've just come to live with it, really. That's what you have to do, I suppose.
So when did you start sort of doing your investigations then? When did that all begin?
First investigation was in Liverpool in 1983. So I'm 41 years in to the subject. That was a UFO incident. The family had reported seeing a UFO, which I investigated. And it's sort of I did about maybe 5, 6, 7 years in ufology, and then I went over to the paranormal. Did some years of research in that, and then I ended up doing corporate investigations for large companies throughout the UK for about 16 years. And then I got more into parapsychological research, experiments, advanced UAP working groups, think tanks, and of course that's kind of where we are now with the projects that we're involved in around the world.
Can you expand on any of the UFO investigations that you did then? So, I mean, one of them that I found when I was looking online was, I think it's colloquially known as the Murphy case.
Yes, the Winter Hill UFO.
Winter Hill one. Now, I spoke to Mick McLaren last week. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Mick does a lot of stuff around Winter Hill, and we briefly sort of discussed that case, because it's quite a famous one from the area, isn't it?
It is quite an interesting case, yeah. I mean, it all started with, I received a telephone call. I wasn't actually even in at the time. It was on court on my answer phone. And we're talking, must have been in the 90s, late 90s maybe. And it was for a gentleman who was called Murphy, who was a Stuart Murphy. He was a cattle hand at a farm on Windsor Hill. He'd been working that night. Um, he, He'd had an incident and contacted the police. Accrington Police Station went, was closes at a certain time. It's like 6 o'clock closes, and they get truncated to the main 872 5050 number, which was Manchester Police headquarters. I had contacts with Manchester Police, so anything like that, you'd usually give my number out on most occasions. And he got over my number, and he left a message on my phone and his number, so I contacted him the following morning. Thought it was a bit late by the time, I think it was about 1 o'clock in the morning by the time I got him, so I thought it was a bit late then. Rang him in the following day, and I got to talk with him, and he told me about having this experience that he heard some kerfuffle outside. He's monitoring the farm for the farmer, so he's kind of there, staying there overnight. The farm owner doesn't, so he's had to kind of look after the livestock. He got They were out on evening graze, or what you might refer to, grazing, and he heard a kerfuffle, usually in normal sounds, sort of coming from the cows, escalators. So that caught his attention. He went out there and he saw an object. The object was relatively low and was tracking the herd, and they were very upset, and they were kind of scattering into different locations to get away from this looming object above. He ran out there in a bit of a panic, trying to get the cows over to the nearer to the farmhouse, when the object seemingly swooped down. And at one point, he said he panicked and he was running back to the farmhouse, looking up. This thing was actually tracking him then, and he said it was about maybe 15 foot above him, which is pretty low. He looked up at it, and it just a very bright source. He said he could feel heat from it. He got inside the house, and of course, this is when he telephoned the police. The object, sometime later, kind of just vanished. We don't know where he kind of went. And of course, he got my number, left a message. I contacted him, and what was interesting is that we kind of set up an agreement for us to go up to the farm and interview him the following day. Problem is that we were going to get there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon to meet with him, and I think he telephoned us just prior to us leaving. I think it was about round about midday or something like that. Some people already at the farm who were talking to him, and they just finished with him, and he said, "I really don't really want to. I don't know if I should talk." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "Well, this was a Sunday as well, actually." So I said, "Well, what was the situation?" And he said, "Well, people came out to the farm, and they were in suits, and they had badges on, not Ministry of Defence, but MAFF, which is Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries and Foods." Interesting enough, Mr. Wilson, who was the actual farm owner, was there, and they talked with Mr. Wilson, and he didn't really, he's quite offensive, and well, oh, you on my land, sort of thing, and like farmers get. And they basically, wave the MAFF badge in his face, and he recognized that straight away, because you got to consider that, this is a time when we'd just come out of the foot and mouth problem, and with the cattle, and you didn't want to cause any ruptions. The MAFF were the guys have the weight behind them to just close your farm. So these guys said, "Look, we want your cooperation." And he realized who these guys were, and he just thought, right, well, do you know what? Do what you want, whatever, I'll help whatever I can. They interviewed Murphy, and by this time, Murphy's side of his face was itchy and sore, as he said. I don't know if it was just from heat or it was just maybe something associated to that incident. And they had arranged to see to around about 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening to meet him back there, because they wanted him to go with him for some tests. He refused, but they said to him, basically one thing or another, you're gonna have to do these tests. So basically, their resources are a lot better than our resources. So we never actually got to Mr. Murphy, but we did get to the farm. Unfortunately, they beat us to the punch. We found out from Mr. Wilson where Murphy was living. So a couple of days later, we thought, let things settle down a bit. We'll go and visit Mr. Murphy at his home. We got to the house and it was completely vacant. The windows, you could look through, there was nothing in there. The whole thing had been gutted. He wasn't there. So there was a quick, presumably a quick move out. Now, we don't know what happened to Mr. Murphy and his wife, who was basically vacated back to the island because he was a very strong Irish person. I don't, he didn't sound to me he'd been long in the country, to be honest with you, because it was that broad Irish. Because you tend to lose it over a period of time in the country in England. And we could never find him. We went back to talk to Mr. Wilson. Mr. Wilson said he's been taught to by the MAFF not to speak to us. And in fact, they said they knew all about us. You know, they knew about our organization, they knew about me, they knew about what we were doing. They obviously, Mr. Murphy had told them that he'd reached out through the police to us. So they must have, you know, by that time, they must have known everything about us. So we haven't actually found Mr. Murphy. Mr. Wilson said, "I can't speak to you. I've been told I'm not allowed to speak to you." So that kind of got closed down very quickly. There isn't many cattle farms up there on the top of Windsor Hill. I could probably name just a two or three of them. But we were monitoring the farm, and there was somebody else monitoring us whilst we were monitoring the farm. We were followed by vehicles, and confronted on one occasion. So there was obviously something that was interest of going on here, and the cattle disappeared one day. We went up there, and there were no cattle. Not in the barn, not anywhere to be found. The cattle didn't actually go to market. You know, we don't know what happened to the cattle. There was about 15 of them. They didn't go to market because we tracked that, and there was no activity from the cattle going to market. So we just don't know what happened. It became a cattle farm without cattle.
Yeah, because they're all registered, aren't they, with the Ministry of Agriculture, Fishery and Food. So
You know that.
you're
Oh, we
supposed to be
actually, yeah, they were very, very thorough. When we were
able
getting massive files of all the data and all the details, the tag details of the animals and all sorts of different things,
Yeah.
they didn't go to market. So we don't know if they were trucked off somewhere, never to be found again. We don't know. Maybe they were purposely taken away in case the cows were somehow infected by this object. Who knows? So Murphy disappeared. Wilson wouldn't talk to us. We ran the investigation still for quite some time. We were being watched, you know, by others, and eventually, you know, the walls started closing around us. So we ended up shelving it, you know, until we can find out more data. Whoever was responsible, they did a good job because we never did get them more data. What we can say is that, you know, this object was clearly nothing, you know, that would be civilian built, you would have thought. Even though at that time British Aerospace was just around the corner, it's not there now, but it was nearby. And we did suspect that maybe it was a test flight or something, maybe then an exotic aircraft, and it shouldn't have been seen, and maybe it came into some trouble, affected the area. But I don't know why it would track Mr. Murphy, and it was an unusual incident or a true phenomena. Either way, though, you know, I mean, that location is no stranger to that type of activity. So yeah, it was an interesting case. Unfortunately, we just never got to conclude it because their resources outweigh our resources, hundreds to one. And we don't even know how they managed to get to the location, to the farm. How did they know Mr. Murphy had seen them? Did he get it through the police? Did he get it through the action? Did he know something that we didn't? It was just, I don't know. But I mean, we're pretty on the ball. But their resources are massively significant, more than ours. So.
So there's many more questions than answers with that one then.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's not the first time incidents up there. There's been close encounter incidents that took place. A friend of mine who's passed away now, Arthur Tomlinson of DIGAP, Direct Investigation Group of Aerial Phenomena, which is based in Manchester. He took a case up there of a girl who was coming home from work, experienced this phenomenon firsthand, close encounter. She started to have, she was such a very close proximity incident. She did have some physical problems with the teeth. Her teeth were kind of just crumbling as if like suddenly calcium deficiency, you know. She was visited by three people from allegedly, I don't know if they were from the Ministry of Defence, but they acted a little unusual. Her father, who was very defensive of her, she was shocked to see that he allowed them in without just open the door to him and sat there comfortably in kind of a bit of a dazed state. While these three guys interrogated his daughter in front of her, basically, and she just couldn't understand. So it's out of character for her father to even let him through the front door, you know. Yeah, he was just so submissive. So that was unusual. He asked her a number of different questions about what she'd experienced and stuff. Pretty much off they went. I just seemed to be interested in what she experienced. She'd went on to have a few issues regarding problems with the teeth and stuff, but it was a close encounter incident, and that was up there on Winter Hill as well, some years back, which Arthur Thomason investigated. So there are lots of strange things up that way. In that, you know, it's not just UFOs, but paranormal incidents and even cryptid type sightings.
Yeah,
And
I was going to ask you about that actually, but just going back to that case you just mentioned a second ago, did you ever find out what she actually saw, what the nature of the
oh,
instrument?
yeah, I mean, she said the crap came over her vehicle. She slammed the brakes on because she was that. She thought it was an aircraft. It was going to land on her. She was at some, obviously going over the hills and stuff, so she had some altitude too. So she's worrying, oh God, is a plane coming down on me? The thing hovered over the car, lit up the car. And, the vehicle was stopped. The object was only, you know, very close, probably 20 feet above her. The whole car was flooded with light. She was screaming and panicking. After a short period of time, and seemingly, if other incidents took place, she doesn't remember it. She got home panicking. The vehicle was left outside the house, and that was seemingly okay. But she just basically said it was some type of object that was hovering over her car, but there were no sound, no wind, no sound. So it kind of rules out the helicopter hypothesis. Is it some type of drone? Well, we've got to be taking, you know, you're looking in the 1980s here. You know, so we've come on a bit since then with drones, of course, but who knows? But it was an interesting incident enough to warrant three guys to come out to her over the next couple of days to the house. So she knew where she lived. I managed to get, in a very strange manner, managed to suppress her father to act as he normally would do to allow them to come in and to interrogate her in front of him. All very, very profound.
So do you think he was coerced then in any way? It certainly sounds like it, doesn't it?
Happened, yeah. I think something, I don't think it's a coerce because it was like he was suppressed mentally in a state, you know, it's like a slight dazed state. So, you know, I mean, he just opened the door to them. So, whatever. She said that they just looked like normal human people, you know, maybe government type. But how his father reacted, how her father reacted, she'd never seen anything like it. Eventually he come round sometime afterwards and she was questioning him, well, you know, how come you let them in? Da 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 da. And he was very vague, his memory as to what had happened. So yeah, something untoward had happened there. It was very unusual.
Yeah, very peculiar, isn't it then,
I mean,
that you know you've got sort of two angles to that story then, haven't you? And
oh yeah, it's very odd.
it's interesting that you mention about the lack of sound and no wind or anything like that, because I've spoken to many people over the years, obviously doing this podcast for the last couple of years, and they all say that when they have similar close encounters that you've just spoken about there. It's the same sort of thing. There's no sound, there's no wind, you can't hear. If it's during the daytime, you can't hear any traffic, you can't hear birds singing or anything like that. It's almost like you're in a complete bubble, where there is no sound getting in or out.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, those bubble experiences are referred to in the UK as the Oz factor. In the US, they're referred to as dead zones or quiet zones. There's a number of different theories behind it, even in quantum mechanics. But those things have been going on for a long time. It's as if, like, your location, it's like the reality of what we're currently in is lifted to the experience, and things aren't quite normal in the real, you know, in your environment during those times. Busy roads don't seem to have any vehicles or people passing by. There's no birds. There's no sound. It's just really, really strange. And this is where we start looking about, well, is our reality, you know, sometime distorted during some of these experiences, and we're brought to the experience, and you know, in the sense of speaking, it's very profound. We haven't really got all the answers to it, but we definitely think it's somehow it's metaphysical based and something to do with maybe quantum mechanics or something that affects our reality during those experiences. Very odd.
Yeah, very odd indeed. So, just going back to Winter Hill, I mean, you mentioned about paranormal incidents and cryptids as well. When I spoke to Mick last week, he was talking quite a bit about dogmen sightings. And also the fabulously named Beast of Bolton. Being a North West lad myself, I know Bolton well. What's your take on those phenomena?
Well, it goes back a long time. I mean, this is not a new phenomenon. I think what came along a long time later is the researchers. I think this has been around for a long time, and not just, in Bolton, and all over the country and all over the world, actually. I think, really, from the research that we've done, is that we're representative of a phenomenon that seemingly changes its appearance. It's a multitude of different things. I think we're dealing with the same phenomenon, but the mass changes over the years. Just, I mean, I work alongside my colleague Barry Fitzgerald, and he recognized early on, in his early days, that the phenomena, if you track the phenomena, then you start to see the same things. If you track the mask, no, it's confusing because the mask is forever changing. And interactions with these various sources, they exist. They're real. They're physical in nature when they want to be, and not physical when they want. So it's a metaphysical phenomenon, just like UFOs can be metaphysical and paranormal. People do experience those things, and it's you try and work it out, but the thing is that phenomena has always been delivering what is referred to as a psychological warfare, in a sense of speaking. It's called absurdity, and what it does is it generates absurdity for a reason. And that absurdity can stretch from anything from seeing a small fairy to a Bigfoot or a banshee, or all sorts of different things. Because we're just, after looking at it, we just kind of shake our heads and say, no one's going to believe this. And sometimes nobody does. And this is why it's delivered in this sense. There's no model to this phenomena. It's forever changing. Those incidents do take place. There's physicality to them. They leave evidence behind. But really, in a physical sense of an animal living up there, it's just not feasible. I mean, it's just, there's nothing to eat. I mean, there's not many places they can hide. I mean, most people used to think, oh, well, it's super elusive, but it's a lot more than that, because large animals like this need a lot of food, and that's not the case. And if they are predators and they're going to track people down, people come to a halt and stopped in fear, then you'd think that an attack might happen, but it never does. It's all about the fear. The reward is the fear, like a poltergeist phenomenon. It's the reward is the fear. It's a fear feeding parasite. This is just like a physical phenomenon of fear feeding. It's kind of the same traits, but in a physical manner. Most people usually sense that the environment is something first. That's what they notice. And it's strange, this environment. Suddenly they get a chill, they fear what sets in, even if they've been to that place a thousand times. Sometimes confusion sets in. Panic, then the animal, or what this thing is, tends to track them if they can see it or not. Sometimes they hear it and they don't see it. And it's all about the fear induction, the vexation cycle. So to us, we're dealing with a metaphysical phenomenon that likes to incite or induce fear. There has been some physical attacks of animals and stuff. It gets a little bit tricky because some of them are cut on the dogs or other things and stuff. So we've got to kind of rule out that. Some of them actually are questionable as to what exactly is responsible. And it doesn't surprise me because, when it is physical, this phenomenon, it can do things like that. So we see it with animal attacks all over the world. So it's the thing is that you can track this back quite over many, many years. And is the phenomena in that location, it's just, it predates the documentation of that area, to be honest with you. This is what we find when we push back. It gets to a point where somebody's not writing about it, because it's early days, and that's when you lose the track. So you have to consider, yes, there's a massive geological connection with this phenomena. It's probably been here forever. It raises its head on what it wants to do, whenever it wants to do. And people will experience that, and they'll probably go on to experience it for another thousands of years to come. It's just, it literally does track back that long. I mean, I know Barry's tracked it back to, thousands of years BC, with the same phenomena. I mean, dog men are doing carvings on Indian temples in India. Dog men, half man, half dog. I mean, why would that be in India? The Sumerian demonology, the demons are dog men. The humans with dog heading. There's old ancient stories about them. In fact, Ramesses in AD, I think it was 14 AD, was debating with the with what is referred to as a bit like a government at that time. Do these things have souls? Because they knew they existed. So if you're going to raise a debate that much, they must have, they must have realized that these things are real to some degree. There's stories all over the world. Dogmen sightings are happening in Australia. We had incidents in Australia last year. I mean, it's all over the place. Sometimes they get referred to as werewolves and things like that, like Ohio. Ohio in the US is a very typical place for werewolf sightings. But again, it tends to be about the figure. There's incidents when they've been pursuing people, and one of them accidentally falls over. The others are so scared they leave him there and just carry on running. So much for your friends. And he's so terrified that you end up with that instinctual behavior takes over to freeze. It's like rabbits in the headlight. If you don't move, you might not see him. It's just some innate thing that takes over us. This thing was stood right over him, this huge thing. At that point, if you think it's predatory, then you'd say, okay, well, free meal, it's a meal ticket, just sat there, It doesn't, it's like the game's up, doesn't know what to do, so it runs off. It's like the whole process is about the fear induction here. So we're doing some work in regarding scientific understanding and tests of fear pheromones and if they can be obtained and if it is somehow to do with that. And also the induction of infrasonic sounds and its effect on us regarding through this phenomenon. So it's a strange thing. And people have tried to put these into different boxes, but that's the problem. The compartmentalization of these subjects is a massive issue. And we've got to break those down to get a clear understanding. And when you do, you start to realize, well, hang on a second, this is in the paranormal camp, or this is in this camp. And you start looking at it at all as phenomenology, all of it. You start to realize very quickly it's making a better picture, a bigger picture here. And then you start to realize, well, hang on a second, the narratives are wrong, what we've been fed over the years. Well, it could have been done on purpose, to be honest with you. You wanted to separate the paranormal guys from the ufological guys or the cryptic guys because those guys had never worked with each other, not interested in each other. And that's a way of never actually putting the dots together. I think once you break those walls down, people are starting to see connectivity, which means there's evidence for it somewhere there that there might have been associations across cross-cultures and beliefs and subjects.
So do you think you talk about this, let's call it a creature for ease, excuse me, sort of feeding off fear. So do you think that people can perceive whatever it is differently according to their level of fear, how they perceive this creature?
Yeah, both actually. I mean, we can have four people experiencing a dogman incident and are pursued, and they'll all say they saw the same thing. It's fine. But there are incidents of paranormal and ufological stuff, and people say, oh, it was round and it was red. And the other person that was with us said, no, it wasn't. It was triangular and it was green. The thing is that, we all perceive slightly different. Trying to, and not only that, during these experiments, we realize that under certain conditions when a phenomenon is interacting, it causes problems psychologically regarding limiting your cognition. So you're not behaving properly either. Plus, you've got to consider, some of this phenomenon could be oscillating at certain speeds, like 17 milliseconds, which will cause confusion regarding color. Other oscillations can cause confusion regarding what's being identified. We're also met with the problematics of programmed memory. Which people think, oh, well, I find out more when you go for hypnosis, and you think, well, I didn't remember that. So there's lots and lots of things. What we can say for sure is that deception and manipulation of our perceptions does take place quite commonly through all these areas of phenomena. Again, another connection between them all.
Can I ask you about Project Doorway?
Sure, yeah. About 8 years in now, Project Doorway. It started with the advanced study of UAP, UFOs. UAP is a new terminology, of course. I'm trying to reboot it, I think. For us, it was trying to we employed the methods of what is referred to as paranormal mechanics, which has come through from the parapsychological experiments about 12 years ago. And we applied that to the process of UAP, and we started to have, obtain data. Some of those things would be like UFOs in connection to positive magnetic regions. Some UFOs, the problem is, we've had this narrative for many years that, oh, it's all visitors from extraterrestrials, visitors from space. The evidence doesn't support it. In 1977, Hynek, Trail Hynek said in a secret meeting with MUFON that there's not enough evidence to support this extraterrestrial. In 2023, September last year, NASA did a very extensive report and study about UFOs, so that they know that they're recorded and photographed and witnessed and documented by the Pentagon and so on and so forth. They also concluded that there's not enough evidence to support the extraterrestrial. So surveys that we carried out with countries that would actually assist, we kind of worked out that, UFOs on a daily basis around planet Earth is probably about every 20 seconds. And then if you actually be conservative and say, okay, well, you know what, some of them are hoaxes and some of them are misidentifications, still a huge number. And where are they all coming from? Because what NASA said is that there's no superhighway. Might get some bits and bobs down again, but there's no superhighway passing backwards and forwards from Earth. There's no dis the mass disturbances in the ionosphere, which they can detect the ionospheric dis alterations and disturbances. So they concluded basically, well, you know what? They're not seemingly coming from outer space. They're not extraterrestrial. So likely the phenomenon has always been here. So the big question is, where are they coming from? The evidence throughout Project Doorway suggests that they're actually interdimensional or something of that nature. This is why we knew that about 5 years ago, we stated that the extraterrestrial hypothesis is going to disappear. This terminology of ETH is going to get replaced by NHI, non-human intelligence. And now that's what we're seeing now. It's all being replaced by NHI because, we've got to get more into the reasoning that these things are not extraterrestrial, but they are here, in a sense, in another reality or another dimension, very close to ours, and we can't control it. They can interact with us at any given moment, and they pay attention to some people. Some people are even targeted individuals. So it's a very big problem that can't be disclosed. No matter how many people take it to the table at Congress, they'll never get anywhere. We know that. It started in the 70s with the Citizens Against Ufology movement. They didn't get anywhere. All they got was pages and pages of redacted information. It's just pointless. They're never going to give up that because they can't give up that. Because unless they give a lie, another narrative, which is just a lie and another spoon fed and another something else to take us away from the source. They are aware at the higher ends, whoever these hierarchy are, that certain government officials, even in Congression, don't have the power to cut through. These guys know that, and they've known this for a while, but disclosing that is just not a feasible thing to do at all. So Project Doorway deals with the advanced study with the paranormal mechanics, the paranormal aspects of ufology, gravity wells from the manifestation of UFOs. We've actually tested, we had plants which have gone under tests, scientific tests, when they've been affected by a UFO that manifests close to the ground. This is what is referred to as plants' biological traumatology tests. And we also looked at the tests of apported phenomena, apports that take place in, say, poltergeist disturbances. We had them analysed. And what was interesting is that the diathermic alteration in that mug, which was, say, apported, is the same traits. It's got the same digital markers as the diathermic alteration in the plants. So we might theorize then that the sudden manifestation of a mug in a poltergeist case and a sudden manifestation of a UFO close to the ground are utilizing the same physics here. There's another giveaway. So the more we do this, the more we cut through the rubbish of the narratives, and that, and now we know for an absolute certainty, we've got so much data now that we are dealing with a source. The source represents itself in multitude of different boxes that we've created. And it delivers in multiple different ways. And it's the source, whatever this source represents, that's what it is. And the source is capable of generating and creating physiological constructs which can interact with us, which they can, because it can be physical sometimes or non-physical other times. So that's pretty much what Project Doorway does. It's investigation-based, active work taking place all around the world, which we've traveled all around the world conducting tests and research and come face to face with the phenomena many times throughout that path. We've also caught the eye of the phenomena, which has tracked us back home on numerous occasions. So we had to write in what we refer to as sort of respite protocols when dealing with the phenomena. Because you do too much, you're going to catch the eye sort of hitchhiker back home with you.
Right.
That can be problematic, which we've had. So it's just a whole different form of investigation style. But we actually are advancing it. We actually are getting there, because we've had to break down all those narratives and all those compartmentalization of different subjects, so that as a whole, that's what Project Doorway pretty much consists of. It's pretty cutting edge, you know.
So it covers a massive number of different subjects then, doesn't it, really? I mean, you're looking at the paranormal, you're looking at UAPs.
Yeah, Craig, we don't see it as different subjects. We
Yeah,
see
how
it.
do they all interact with each other?
Yeah, so what we do is we said that we do it the other way around, basically. Well, what's happening here? What's been reported? And rather than putting this boxes, we kind of say, okay, well, what's the connectivity here? You know, I mean, why are people having paranormal actions associated to UFO stuff? And that's been coming right from the Project Blue Book days. But the Blue Book officers that went out was all orchestrated, of course. You know, Mrs. Brown said, oh, well, you know, I saw this UFO over the farmhouse, and then we had 2 weeks of poltergeist type stuff. But they don't want to know that. They say, oh, Mrs. Brown, stick to the, we don't know that ghosty stuff, just stick to the story about the UFO. It was happening back then, you know, that these boxes were being created purposefully. Maybe because we will never connect those dots if we don't look into these other areas, be even parapsychological, metaphysical studies, quantum studies. It all has something to play on this. So it covers everything. Yeah, you could say it's the paranormal, supernatural, the cryptid, even some cases the demonological aspects, UFO, you know, you name it, it's in there, because it's all the same source being delivered in multitude of different ways.
You mentioned hitchhikers, problematic hitchhikers. So what sort of experiences have you had with that? Because you mentioned got to be very careful you don't bring things away with you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the early days, you always used to get a little bit, you know, trapped back home. But when we started getting into these studies, that's when we caught the eye of the phenomenon. The phenomenon watches us now, because we've been involved with it a long time. Through the experiments, there are a lot of experiments. I mean, in parapsychological circles, I've been involved in 17 specialized in experiments. Only four have been released to the general public. Just released an extra one, actually. They were just preparing to release an extra one, because it has to be delivered in digestible chunks, really, for the general public to try and get a grasp of this. And what happens is that when we started to don't get me wrong, you know, what phenomena is actually occurring for you at a significant degree, you start to think, oh, I want to do more. It's exciting, you know. I want to do it again. Let's do it again. Let's come back tomorrow. Let's do it again. Do it again. And that's what the phenomena wants. It wants you to do that, because as it's doing that, it's getting under your skin. After a period of time, then you start to realize you didn't leave the phenomena at the experiment. It tracked you back and come back with you. And it starts causing problems, you know, at home. And so this is why we had to introduce the protocols of respite, so that it, you know, it's a safety protocol, so that, you know, that doesn't happen too much. A phenomenon has demonstrated a multitude of metaphysical phenomena to us. It's done on purpose to show us their capabilities, from balls of light bouncing on the table to going through the table and up through the table, down through the table and up again, and then bouncing on the table again. So it's like demonstrating, oh, I can be physical, or sometimes I don't need to be. Objects can slide across a moving table, and you might get a direct voice phenomena, which is kind of electronic based, nor female nor male. To move the object back, so you'll move it back, and then the last it'll move again. They'll ask you to move it back, and you'll go and reach out for it, but you can't grab the damn thing. You can see it; it exists in our visual sight, under camera, you can see that it's there and it measures in visual range, but it's not physical in nature until they want it to be, you know. So they can break the laws of physics easily. Recorded phenomena through instrumental transcommunication tests in experiment two, which was reached a degree of being able to direct voice phenomena with them, but through the provisional process of ITC, recording on various different equipment, even cassette tapes and all sorts of different things, we realized that we could pull the power out from the cassette tapes. This has been done before in a skull experiment as well. And it's still further on in the cassette, even though it's not going round, it's somehow further along the phenomena replies on tape. You can take, even if you take the recording head out, you didn't need, actually, in fact, all we needed to do is put a cassette on the side. We didn't even need the machine. You can,
Wow.
it's called transplacement phenomena. This is what the phenomena can do. You can
Right.
transplace to us as well, because the whole hypothesis that, you know, these things have been communicating with us telepathically never was. It's called the process of transplacement. It's interacting with us because we're pieces of equipment. It bypasses the eardrum. It causes the vibrations and liquids of the inner ear. So therefore, you're hearing voice. And you're thinking, am I just hearing this? Well, you might be, because it might have just targeted you. Sometimes it can target other people together if you wanted to. You can't rule out when somebody says, I've just heard something now. That's the problem. You know, we're mechanisms just as much, really. I mean, radios that communicate with these things, tubes have been taken out of the radios and they still work. You know, still capture them. They bellow out. They've been put in Faraday cages, they still bellow out. It's they're breaching the possible the boundaries of physical phenomena. You know, I mean, we even got incidents in the UFO side where beams of light have come down and affected certain types of equipment and things like that, maybe military base. And some of those things, when examining them, have been physically damaged. Physically damaged, which means, again, it's, you know, they're demonstrating the same phenomenon in numerous different ways. So that's pretty much what Project Doorway is about. It's recognizing a number of high think tanks in areas around the world, which are also working in these specific areas, should we say. And some of them have known for quite some time, yeah.
Yeah. So you mentioned what you may describe as demons. I mean, obviously, there's historically there's been many a story about people who've been sort of, you know, in inverted commas, taken over by demons. So is this, and forgive me because I this is the first time really that I've spoken to anybody about this type of phenomena, so I'm very much learning as you're telling me what, you know, what it's all about. It's all new to me, and some of it I'm just trying to process as you're telling it, man. So if you've got something which attaches itself then to you as a person, and it is doing things to you, it's acting in a certain way, is that then why people historically going back in the past have thought that people have been possessed? Do you think that's the same sort of thing?
All the same thing. It's just a different mask. I mean, and, you know, if I said to people that there are no demons, you know, no devils, no demons, no angels, no cupids, no cherubs, you know, all these things, it's the source. It's just, it presents itself in numerous different ways. The Catholic Church knew that years back because they panicked and turned all those experiences, those early UFO and occupant type experiences, into, oh God, let's change it to an angel, let's change that to a cupid, let's change it to this, which is dead. Because if you go back to the Vatican and look at the source material, it tells you what it really was. Oh no, we can't put that in the Bibles, you know. So it's been interacting for a long time there, where it's been going on as long as it can go back in time. I think it predates documentation anyway, so it's kind of always been here. We might be the new kids on the block, but yeah, it's all kind of the same thing. It's all one of the same thing. You know, manipulation. Yeah, total manipulation by this phenomenon. Sometimes, you know, it's just like humans. You know, sometimes they'll do some good stuff, sometimes they'll do some bad stuff. There's just agenda at the end of the day. It's not like, oh well, you know, it's they're all this or they're all that. They appear to be whatever they want, you know, and they interact and manipulate mankind as they've gone on for a long time. We are the problem. We are the problems that keep putting these things into boxes and names and stuff. And it fits, and they'll use that. They'll go, well, you know, that's why is everything grays at the minute? You know, well, Well, you have to ask, the question isn't that. The question is, why did it change in the 1950s from the Space Brothers humans to the Greys? Important question. Or if you want to go back before that, you can do. You can go back to the serpent worship, the lizard people, the reptilian type stuff. And again, you can go back even further and start changing and changing. It's forever changing. In different regions, in different belief systems around the world, different places, they'll have what is referred to the phenomena generated there will be befitting to what the ideas and the concepts of religion is, or the concepts of myth is. That's why it delivers itself in a completely different manner in Ireland, as the Fae and stuff. Exactly the same phenomena, just doing the same thing, but in a different mask. And the same applies to other places all over the world, but it's all doing the same thing in a different manner, whatever that thinks it's suitable for in that region. And this is what happens. Time changes things. The narratives will change over time because they seem to fit, try and fit in to the handprint of our understanding of that time. And ours is understandings are forever changing. It has to change. So what you do, this phenomena is evolving. And it learns. It's very, very clever at learning. Occasionally they make mistakes. They're not infallible, but they occasionally make mistakes, which just think, oh, well, there's a UFO that's just landed in 2009 in an incident. Well, what's that? Oh, it's got 1930s round porthole window with rivets. Well, didn't get that right, did they? And because what they're seeing is not what it is. That's just the problem, the perception, and it just kind of gets mixed up. So yeah, they make mistakes, but they'll learn from it. They'll learn from it, straight away. And they are evolving with us, and we've been evolving with us for a very, very long time. So when you talk about demons and stuff, it's all the same phenomena. It's just how we perceive it. It's a different mask. We've even created scenarios on how to deal with these things. Oh, well, these are like this. This is how you deal with them. This is how you deal with them. They don't. If this phenomenon is very clever, it wants us to believe that you have some power, you have some clout. So therefore, it might vacate because you've done a blessing. Well, that's because it wants us to see that, oh, well, this narrative works. So therefore, let's go down that path. The bottom line, the real story is that you've got no control over this thing whatsoever. It's also being duped along the way.
So exorcism, just going back to the Catholic Church, that's then this phenomena just allowing somebody to think that they've got the upper hand by
Well, don't get me
revealing
wrong.
them to the person.
They do vacate sometimes, And in fact, exorcisms are only 12% successful. Okay, the first thing they won't tell you. Out of the 12 that do sort of disappear, the priests and everybody, will raise that to the roof and tell everybody, and everybody got this theory, this narrative that, oh, right, well, if you bless a property, if you do an exorcism, that sort of thing, then that's going to work. If you think it's worked, then it's worked for them. Because now we believe that actually works. And that's what they want you to believe. Because what they don't want you to believe is that you've got no control over this phenomenon. And we don't. We're puppets on a string. We've got no way we can deal with this. And it does it on purpose because it is what we refer to as the human psychological warfare. It's been going on for a long time, but with this phenomenon, it does it on purpose. The absurdity phenomenon is usually the opposite of what we think. Always. I say to people, just think of the opposite. It's probably that. But they do have some diversions to stuff. You don't, negative phenomena doesn't like UV. Negative phenomena doesn't like iron. It's an ancient thing that goes back across time and countries. And it's been evading or suppressing phenomena in numerous different ways. It doesn't work underground, unfortunately, but it works above ground perfectly. And it does, and on many occasions, it's assistful. You could say, well, just like John Keel said many years back in his studies, ultra-terrestrial studies, he was one of the early ones that came out and got shunned for saying what he did, and it's acceptable a bit more these days, thank God, that some of these things are active in the infrared, some of these things in the ultraviolet. The negative stuff is more in the infrared, as he would say. Therefore, when you get these night disturbances and things like that, they usually have a negative time. If you've been woke up around about the 3 o'clock, what's the narrative? Well, the narrative is, oh, it's evil, it's a devil, it's a demon, because it's doing it at 3 o'clock. It's a mock of the Trinity. Jesus was, crucified on the cross. It's a mock of that. It's done on purpose to make us think that. People think that it can't interact during the day, or it's always in a darkened room when sales, or it's got to be dark, it won't manifest, it won't. Absolute crock of rubbish. This is what it wants to make you think that, because it's not, it's absurdity, it's not true. We've got to learn to how we get our heads around this before we even try and understand what we're going to be dealing with. And that's a big problem, because people are stuck in this social conditioning of the subjects for many, many years and being drip-fed this narrative so much that they can't get it out of their head. Now, you've got people running around on a paranormal investigation with infrared lights, just so that they hope to pick up stuff. But what they don't realize is, if you want to go into somebody's home and watch reading phenomena, that the induction of infrared light in the location is an attraction for negative phenomena. It's not going to help people. That it might help you to be able to see better. I would say use it all, all field spectrum rather than infrared. But there's so many things that people don't realize because they can't get out of the narrative, and that's a big problem, Craig. When pushing forward, we're more the problem, humanity, because we've thought, oh well, we put it in this spot, and this is what I believe, and this is how to get, and this is how to help, and this is how to get rid of it. I mean, we've read disturbances in people's homes, not even been to them. We've just advised them to do a number of different things, and we tend to sometimes, we completely rid the phenomenon on this, on the backbone of what we advise them to do. That would normally be unheard of without actual active investigation to get rid of disturbances in a home. But it's just knowing what you're dealing with at the end of the day, and after a while, they can identify the fact that So when you start to press, they'll take a step back, and you'll press more, and they'll take a step back. They don't like that. And when you press a bit too much, sometimes they get a bit, they get a bit nasty. It's like a biting dog. You push a dog, and it gets a bit afraid. Push a dog again, it gets a bit afraid. Push it, push it, push it. It's going to snap. And it's the same behavioral standards with phenomena as it is with anything else, to be honest with you.
So do you think that's where you get sort of really violent physical poltergeist activity from then?
Yeah, you can get real physical stuff. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, yeah, they can do. The problematics of this is that the first thing is that you have to take away its energy of doing so. I mean, phenomena like that is feeding off the people's vexation cycle to generate it. They're absolutely terrified, and it's feeding off that. It's a vicious cycle. You remove the induction of fear and suppression. If you can lower that, you'll lower the phenomena. In fact, when the people realize you're lowering the phenomena, it kind of get this realism that they are associated with it somehow, and it reinforces the fact that they are a little bit more in control. They can control their own actions. They can control the phenomena. We're the ones in power. Not the phenomenon. The phenomenon is just feeding, trying to create fear. They know the human so well that how to generate fear. I've become numb to it now through the process of practice. I mean, I've sat in many places, in dungeons and stuff. Oh, there's a demon down there, and I've sat down there in the dark, and bored out my head doing a crossword. You know what I mean? But because but if you turn somebody else down, they might get an interaction. Because it's not going to get the rise from me, because I'm onto it, and they look at me and they kind of back off, and they do the same with my colleague Barry Fitzgerald. But they've got the beady eyes on us always, because now we've had our foot in that pool for so long, the door doesn't shut anymore. So we are now, unfortunately, on their list, in a sense of speaking, their scope. And we have regular occurrences we cannot shut down anymore, because the door's been jammed open in some sense because of overproduction of investigation and research into areas that they didn't like, which caught their attention. So everything's done in small quantities. There is a risk involved with all phenomena. I keep saying to people to this, always take into consideration that you are relying upon your own senses. This work, Barry did some great work on this, and it's about you're recognizing your fight or flight. The skin in our bodies is the biggest organ we have, and it tells us. Paranormal investigators will tell you that when you walk into a room and all the hairs stand up on end. What is that? Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's your fight or flight. It's your survival sense kicking in, saying, just because I don't see something, just because I don't hear something, doesn't mean it's not there. I don't like it. Back off. That's what your body's telling you.
Yeah.
Normally, we do the opposite thing, but in some cases, it's the wrong thing to do, because this is why people end up having bad experiences sometimes, because you haven't listened to the instinct. But the problem is, society doesn't want this, wants that out of us. It wants to dumb us down to this phenomenon, because the hierarchy know, that our ancient ancestors were so pure, we didn't have chemicals and all this stuff, and we breathe and drink and eat, poisoning the body on a daily basis. They didn't have. They were very attuned. That with planet Earth and frequencies and the phenomena. The thing is, we're disconnected, and they want to keep us that way. So what did it do? They keep introducing all these chemicals and stuff, get us hooked on refined sugar. That's the worst one. When we do an investigation, we tend to starve ourselves with 72 hours of refined sugar. It's surprising how your body reacts, fight or flight response, because sugar causes adrenal weakness, which is separating you from your fight or flight. So your warning signals are going to be gone. Not going to get them. If you attune your body to recognizing phenomena, then react to it. I always say, if your body's reacting, it's saying take a step back, not a step forward. You've got nothing. It's because it's the fear induction. Your body's recognizing something which is dangerous. If you don't have that feeling and you do experience it, then it's usually probably okay. But listen, sometimes it's not, and you'll listen to the body to do that. So they have a process of how to do that when we're out and in active investigations and stuff. It's just a learning process, to be honest with you, and changing the mindset, because somebody's learned that from somebody else and somebody else and somebody else. And only took them only to be wrong, and everybody's wrong, and this is the problem, is that no way are we saying we're absolutely right on everything, but what we are saying is that we can put it to the test and prove a lot of things. And that one thing is that we do still have a mechanism inside us that's a survival sense. It's a warning mechanism. We still do have it if we want to listen to it. But you've got to get that refined sugar is the worst thing, really, because you're not going to get your fight or flight response. You're not going to have it. The warning signals are going to be going off, and you're not going to be hearing them. So sometimes it's listen to forget this and kind of more this, really. And this is how our ancients did it as well,
So, has there ever been, throughout all your investigations, all your research, has there ever been any times where you've actually thought, shit, this is scary, has there ever been anything that's really worried you?
Well, I mean, first time I got thumped across the room by a poltergeist. Yeah, that was worrying. That was 1996. In fact, I almost left
Right.
study. I almost left and didn't. I didn't deal with that very well, as you well
So
imagine.
what happened?
Well, actually, I mean, there was an investigation that we're doing on behalf of Rochdale City Council regarding poltergeist disturbances in a home, and there was a few of us in the researchers in the in one of the rooms, and we heard a noise behind us like a rasping breath, and just about to turn around, and I got thumped, and I ended up across the room, and it was a real and it bloody hurt. To be honest, I had a big bruise there for weeks, And what was interesting though is that early on in my life I'd been an engineer and an electrician and all sorts of things, so. I knew what it was like to have an electric shock, because I used to think, quite a big guy. How do you lift me again on the top of a? I ended up on top of a dressing table. I mean, how does it do that? I mean, really. And afterwards, when I realised it was kind of a, basically, it was a physical punch, but it was also an electric shock at the same time. It's the electrical, the natural electrical phenomena part side of the poltergeist disturbance, the infestation. So it's. But I could recognize that from being an engineer. Well, it repels you, and that's kind of how it did, as well as a physical punch. So yeah, that was it bothered me. A few days later, I was like, wow, how does it do that? And I started getting into the physics of it, and then I thought I've ended up back in it again, but at that time it was, that's it, I'm done, I'm out of it, and you learn over the years. Yeah, there's been some. He's put on some displays to try and scare the living daylights out of us sometimes. But we're onto it, and usually once we get to that point, sometimes there are different, this isn't something else as well, that there are different things with different energies, or you might say ranking. It's like a ranking. It's like we'll send the big boy out, sort of. Sometimes, we've been involved in stuff when we get the little things and the minions, as we say. They don't bother us. We know how to deal with those sort of things. Sometimes, if we're really doing something, it really catches their eye. They send the big boy out, and when they do send the big boys out, I mean, this is like sending the army out. You know, they'll rip right through your house, ripping light fittings off and throwing stuff around, and you know, and manifesting in the horrible images and stuff. You know, it's or they'll reach out from underneath the bed. The physical arms will come through the bed, underneath of the bed, and grab hold of you and. You know, they do it on purpose. So when you get to that stage and you send the big boy out, you know what they haven't really learned. Maybe it's just a human trait. It's reverse psychology. I mean, they just hang on a sec. You just realize. Well, you realize what you're doing. You just told us, fuel on the, you know, putting fuel on the fire. You just told us you're on the right path here. You just by your actions alone. They don't seem to get that for some reason. I don't know why. You'd think they would, but. You know, but sometimes, you know, we've had, yeah, they presented us. But if you know how to, if you know what they're doing, you kind of work the mechanisms out. It doesn't matter how they appear. Certainly in our minds, you know, they can appear to be whatever because they're trying to get a trigger response. But if you can see through that and see the pretense that's behind it, then it doesn't work too well for them, and then they get very frustrated.
This is perhaps why they're so interested in you, because they know that you've got the measure of them.
Well, to some degree, I have. I mean, I don't think I've put a dinner. I don't think that's. I don't think I'll learn it all in my lifetime. But I'm kind of onto a lot of the stuff, as well as Barry, you know. And this is why we're always on their scope. Always now, we know we're on their scope, you know, because they're always watching and we're always around, you know.
Yeah, so I was going to say, so do you feel them around all the time then?
Well, I mean, just, you
You know,
know.
when you're having a shower or when you're having
Well, no. I mean, so no.
meal
I
or
mean,
something.
we live kind of normal lives, but what happens is that I'll get a certain feeling, and myself and Barry the same. It's like the taste of a lemon; you never forget the taste. And I'll usually say, "All right, okay, all right." So we did something here tonight, you know. And usually they just like to play tricks and annoy you. I'll usually just shout at them, you know, and lose my temper with them. But sometimes it's things which are if depending on the research we do, we know because we can tell what. Well, why is that happening? Oh, it's we're doing that same research again, Barry. I mean, we myself and Barry worked in, you know, Sumerian demonology for a while, invocation, Enochian invocation and stuff. This is the same thing that Aleister Crowley was involved in the, you know, in the invocation of Lamb and Jack Parsons and stuff like that, which they were doing it as well. So. We did study that area as well, very well. And we know the trigger responses to get reactions from the phenomena. Usually they want something in return. I wouldn't give them. Sometimes when dealing with that, then you're dealing with something sort of up the chain a little bit more, should we say. There are simple things that they just won't answer for us. You know, they just won't tell us. And they'll tell us, they won't tell us. But these things have replied that, you know, we appear to be what you want us to appear. Or they've actually even used the term mask themselves in communications. So, yeah, I mean, we've got to a point where we're identifying what it isn't, which is more so than what it is. Whatever this source is, if it's godly or whatever. You know, what we want to call it, it's the source that's responsible for the lot. I mean, think about it. 3,000 different varied aliens going from all these different planets. Don't it just sound like a Star Wars episode? Oh, and all bipedal, two arms, two legs, two eyes, two nose, and so on.
Very Star Trek, isn't it?
Well, yeah, if you want to see somewhere alien, just go to the bottom of the North Sea. You know, I mean, it's just, you look at it and you think, oh, this narrative is driving bloody potty. You know, and they'll always give you the good old one-liners. Oh, we're here to save planet Earth. Really? Why? What have we done? You know, you've done nothing. In fact, you should have done it 25 years ago because we've gone past saving Earth now. That's why all the money's being spent looking in for new planet Earth. Because if we press the button today, it's going to take 25 years for the machine to stop. And we're already 25 years gone by, you know, so there's no returning on that. So what have they done? No, nothing. Oh, so you're here to save humanity? All right. So what have you done about warring? Millions of lives being killed every other week or so. Absolutely nothing. So basically, you tell us that you're here to save planet Earth, but you've done nothing, and you're here to save humanity and done nothing. Okay, well, you know, proof's in the pudding as far as I'm concerned. It's like the old one-liner. If you come across the humans, this is what you say. You know, it's the old one-liners, you know, because it's just, we're onto them, buddy. You know, that's as simple as it.
It sort of strikes me then in a way that this phenomenon is feeding off us, isn't it? It's feeding off fear. It's
Some of
feeding
it,
off.
yeah, some of it, not all of it, some of it does, yeah, some of it
It's
is
feeding
fear.
off our emotions. So it's not gonna come here to save us. Well, it might do because it needs us, doesn't it? Is that how it comes across, that it needs us?
Well, yeah, I think we're definitely, I mean, we might be the byproduct of something that they created, to be honest with you.
Are we like cattle to them? Are we?
Course we are.
Yeah.
It,
That's quite a thought, isn't it?
I mean, it's no different than us being godly to a gazelle. I mean, I think
Exactly.
what's the gazelle think when we take it and analyze it? Sometimes we might take it in and feed it, and oh, it's injured, let's heal it, let's feed it, and it'll go away to the crowd and say, "I've had a wonderful experience." But then the guy next to me is tagging him, taking him down, and doing some medical tests on him, which might be a bit painful. We don't know. And he's going to go flying back there and saying, "Well, we're the evil aliens," So it's no different, really, than us trying to understand, like an ant trying to understand us. It's we can't get our heads around this because they're so masterful that they've got us exactly where they want us. They manipulate us, our perceptions, our physical aspects and psychological aspects. And so if once you nail that down, then there's not a lot we can do, to be honest with you. We ain't got no control over this, and that's why we won't get disclosure, because bottom line, you can't drop this on the laps of the general public.
Oh no,
Never digest it. Never.
I'm gonna say there would be mass panic, wouldn't there? So, well, that's probably an understatement. So, do the top echelons of world government know about this phenomenon? Have they dealt with it
Oh, a long time.
for a long time?
Yeah, this is why. I mean, the whole point, I'll give you just one aspect. There's thousands of aspects. Let me give you one aspect. Everything that we've done by getting to space is through them. They give us the information. They were communicating to rocket scientists, to get us into space. And they've done it. They've raised our technological capabilities to get us to space, and it's down to them. The hierarchies who go into space, this is why they won't tell you or me or the general public, but they pay homage. This is why Masonic things are done on the moon prior to the moon, but prior to the American flag, there was a Masonic flag. Masonic rituals took place on the moon. And when you do certain launches, this is why they call them the godly names, Apollo and all these sort of things, because the Greek gods, they're exactly the same phenomena. Greek gods were experienced, believe it or not. This is not myth. The Greek gods were experienced because the phenomena delivered itself to them like that, just as it did with Sheba, and Buddha and all those other ones. This is what it does. And this is why the religions are so well rooted, is because of they come from times when these things were being physically interacted with. Some crafts as well, like Vimanas and things in India and stuff, and many others around, the world from thousands of years ago. The thing is that it's just been delivering to us in a different way, into different cultures, and different names, different societies, different social upbringings. And that's the biggest problem, is because we all think it's separate things, but it's not. It's all just this thing acts like a virus. It can be passed through from one person to another as well, and through association of the phenomena. So there's so much we've got to kind of get our heads around with this, to be honest, because we've got to slowly start dissecting, putting things in away, get rid of the boxes, realizing this is the overall source of what it's going to be, relating to us in regarding our experiences with these things. But they can be anything, really. People have said, "Oh, it was animated toys, or it looked like a clown, it looked like a deer, it looked like a bird. Oh, it was a giant bunny. It was sat in the road." That was another one that came from the Navajo Rangers. So many different things. What? It's all the same phenomena. If all we got to do is look at the whole picture, and you start to realize, yeah, this doesn't add up. And now they're saying, oh, they're all shouting out, "There's no evidence of it being extraterrestrial somewhere." Well, I tell you what, they're right here, they're right now. They're just right under our noses, but we don't know it because we are the most limited thing or living thing on this planet. Why? We're so intelligent, but why are we the most limited thing? Well, with intelligence comes knowledge, and we can't have that. So what these do is, I mean, humans are naturally limited right down, worse than any insect, worse than any animal you'll meet. We're the worst on the planet. Our limited sight, hearing, sense, smell, everything, touch, whatever it is, we've been limited so that we are blind to what's around us. Even our pet cat knows more about what's behind, what's around us, than even we do, and yet, it's crazy. But it's we there's way we've been humanly designed to wear these massive blinkers so that we can't see what's around us. It's all part and parcel of the creation of humanity, in a sense of speaking, that we were never supposed to peer through the doorway, through the veils to the gods. And when you do, and you realize that, well, you know what, whatever this thing is, it's been with us forever, and it can be anything it wants to be and interact anytime it wants to be. If you gain its eye, it interacts with you. It does have a sting in its tail sometimes, if you're not careful. Other times, it can be rewarding, especially to those that are inventors, musicians. People are going to change the society in the world. They've been interacting with us a long time, this phenomenon. It still does it today. But the science, how it's got to the stars, no matter if it's the Germans, no matter if it's the Russians, no matter if it's the UK or US, the top scientists all got the download information, all got told, all into, in fact, most of them were actually in occult rituals and were communicating with non-human intelligences to get the information. It's what Jack Parsons did. And this is why he'd been able to go into work on a Tuesday morning and build a rocket, and people think, how the hell did he do that? Well, because he told how to do it, and he did it, and it was achievable. But to do that, though, you've got to pay homage. And this is why they're secretly still paying homage today. They're still doing it, still launches happening now. And if you see somebody, you don't see them because they're not in the public domain, but I've seen some of these details of these launches. And if you look at the sides of these crafts, they've got Enochian symbolism on it. They've got ancient Latin symbols on it. It's homage writing and language to the deceased intelligences for thanking them for us to getting us to the stars. And they all know it, but they don't talk about it. It's like the big hush hush.
So why do they want us to go to the stars, do you think?
No idea. What they seemingly the problem about it is that they're advancing us. This is why UFOs crash. Do you think they're gonna, let's just crash a UFO? I mean, it's just gonna, oh, this UFO's just fallen apart in the sky. Oh, it's broken down. Oh, it's crashed. Oh, it's blown up. Oh, pieces have fell off. I mean, these are offerings. In the hierarchy, in my circles, in my think tanks, some things I can't say, but look, what I can say is these are referred to as gifting fields. They're referred to as offerings. These are done on purpose. The sacrifices of biologics and technology. So, because it will advance us secretly through the military process first, 50, 60, 80 years, eventually it gets to the public domain, one way or the other. Time is a whole different thing to them as it is to us. But it does advance us. These things are being done purposeful. Nothing comes down accidentally. It's just going to suddenly, because. These craft did not, this isn't, these aren't things, transports for the phenomena. The craft is the phenomena. That's what they don't recognize.
So, just one last question, if you don't mind.
Sure.
If the top echelons of government know about this and are working with them, do you think there will ever be a time where they will hold their hands up and say, well, actually, this is what's going on? Or do you think it is just so mind-bending for you?
No, they'll never do that because they need power and control.
Like me.
A lot of most people that work for these and keep your head down, get on with life and don't ask any questions. That order's been there from ancient times. It was formulated in ancient times. The process is still working today. It's called the fear process, it's called government, how it governs. I mean, think of the word governing over what? Well, if we're not different then, there's no one to govern over. So the even in the word means divine. And this is what it was in Sumerian days and going back. You can go back. It was employed. That same process is modern today, but it seeped through. Those that are inducted into those sorts of things, the hierarchy are brought up and aware of these things. Sometimes they actually will pay homage in numerous different ways. With the Goddard Tunnel, the biggest tunnel in the world that went through Switzerland. the massive underground tunnels for the train system. There's a whole satanic opening ceremony where delegates all over the world came, and it's to pay. It's nothing to do about it. We go, oh my God, they're all Satan worships. No, it's not. It's just in a. It's a mask. It's recognizing that this is a mask for the blood. The phenomenal recognize this is for them. So thank you. Please make it successful. Please make us healthy and wealthy and all those sort of things. Oh yeah, it kind of works. I think eventually you might get. I don't know what happens at the end of it, but they're rewarded to some degree in it, if being success. And that's happening at every level around the world by those I know. And this is why, we build medical, not medical, weapons. These different types of weapons that we use now, chemical weapon sites have been relocated to negative anomalies in association to the homaging of these things, and it's successful and it's good for them. And but there's all that. People think it's a really dark side. It isn't. It's just because it's also put these names and things to it. It's all just, if you forget the face of it and the names of it, it's all the same thing. But yes, it's there is a divide, and I am aware, absolutely aware of the of people knowing about this, but they don't talk about it. Keep it quiet.
Wow. Well, all I can say is I am absolutely blown away. There's an awful lot.
Well, do you know what most people in this subject, I mean, I get everybody, but most of them are on the they're trying to make the best out of the known narrative. We left that narrative long ago. But eventually, they'll get frustrated because they hit a brick wall. They won't go no further. And they can't because they think, why am I not getting any further? Well, it's because you've just boxed yourself into the box you work in. Get rid of the box, get rid of the narrative. Don't believe what you're told.
It's
Got one
perception, but
Yeah, I mean, we get an example. We get somebody who goes and gets abducted by this phenomena. Of course, they're always taken to their environment. You don't last long in our environment. That's a whole other story about the immunity system. But they have programmed memory. They have a bad experience, actually, but they don't remember it. So they go, oh, it's all great, it's all love and light. And they'll go and tell a researcher, and that researcher will write a book, and 40,000 people will read that book and go, oh, it's all love and light. That's the phenomena at the end of the day. All it wants is homage. It wants attention. It likes its flock. Always question what you're praying to. Always question what you're bringing in. Bring in the Holy Spirit. What's the Holy Spirit?
I was gonna say, is there a God aspect to this?
The God aspect is part and parcel of the narrative. The source is the source. We've got different names for them. They can present themselves in different ways. We've got ours, which is called, we call it God. But if you go to the Old Testament, our God had his bad days and would smite people. He even asked people to sacrifice the sons to him, blood wish. Our God, I mean, no different than the Mayans, Aztec, Incas, and any other God around the world. They've all wanted their pound of flesh at some point. And this is what Jack Parsons had, when Jack Parsons said, well, do you know what? We'll give you the geological location to go out to a certain location to interact with us. Where was it? Middle of the Mojave Desert. What did he do to have to gain information from him? Well, he had to give him a sample of his own blood, which was a blood offering. It's a sacrifice. He didn't realize what he was doing, but that's what it was. He'd give him something in return. Oh, these always want something normally in return. So, it's and then half of it, sometimes they give you disinformation on purpose sometimes. This is why the Vril Society were doing it. This is why Boeing, Bell and Douglas, the aircraft companies, got around sales tables to try to get information from them about advanced aviation. It's been going on for a long, long, long. But it's not so much like, oh, is it a god or this? Is the source? We just got to get off that. We've got to train ourselves not to get out of what they've done for years and years and years of this narrative. And once you realize, you're starting to kind of have a light bulb moment and go, oh, bloody hell. Well, we've been trying to figure out what the hell that is, but we didn't even need to be there. Because that box doesn't even exist. They created that box. We're wondering how to work out what's going on in that box. Why? Forget the box. It's That's the whole point of this. And eventually, it's when people get a little bit unstuck when it comes to research because they won't go no further and they'll try and figure out, well, why? What else do we need to do? You basically, it's the whole process needs to change and what's needed to be done here in the approach of investigation and research. So, for me, I've been lucky. I mean, don't tell me what I am. I consider myself very lucky to be able to talk to academics and professors and certain people which are open to talk to me about things I can't talk about to the public, but I get to find out stuff. And I can certainly say the reality we live in is massively different than what we think. But if you want to follow the narrative, which is comfortable, you can manage it. You can hold your head down and you can carry on with work and never look up and never ask any questions. You'll get through life. For me, though, I think to myself, God, there's more than life than this. There's got to be so much more out there, and you have to pry open it like a bad can. And when you do, you might realize sometimes, well, it doesn't always smell sweet inside, but it is what it is. The problem is that we only know how to describe something from with the learning of description, and this is the biggest problem. It's a source at the end of the day. Even AI is telling us that it's a source. Even AI pointed out that everything is connected, paranormal, supernatural, ufological, cryptids, everything is because of its connectivity. You AI sorted that out very quickly.
Yeah.
But it said what was responsible, it said the source, whatever that source is. Is it God? If we have to come up with a name, then yeah, it's God,
Well, it's been an absolute eye opener for me, Steve. Thank you
Oh,
very
you're
much.
welcome. Yeah, you're welcome.
It's been amazing talking to you. Really unbelievable subject. I hope that the people that listen to this podcast are as blown away as I have been in this, because I'm sure they will be. Working.
I'm still learning myself, mate.
I think we're all learning, aren't we? We all learn through life, but where can people get in contact with you, Steve?
Well, I mean, basically, most people, there's so many different places to get in touch with me. I would just normally say put Steve Mera in, Mera, Steve Mera, into any Google, and it'll pop up somewhere.
Yeah.
I've always made myself easy to get hold of. My details are out there. I've never, people have said to me, I can't believe, oh, I managed to speak to you. I said, well, I've always done that. I mean, phone number, I have nothing to hide. My phone number's up all over the internet. My email's there. Just get in touch. And I've always been helpful because the work I've done over 41 years now is about delivering it. Not holding to, a lot of researchers don't. It's like, oh, it's mine. So I mean, well, what is the point? The whole point is trying to advance this and get people to kind of understand what the reality is like around them. We might be all together eventually figure something out, but it's always out there. So yeah, I would say my email address is s_mera@yahoo.com. You can get in touch with me through phenomenamagazine.co.uk, which is I'm the CEO of Phenomena Magazine, so that would come my direction. My own official YouTube channel is Steve Mera Official. A lot of my work I put out on Project Doorways on there, so anybody can watch it. I regularly put in content out. But most people just kind of type my name up somewhere. Well, there's loads of stuff out there, won't they?
It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and thank you for taking the time to chat through me. It's been, as I say, it's been a real eye opener.
No,
And
glad to.
it's an amazing subject. It's a fascinating, fascinating subject. So, thank you. It's been great.
No, well, thank you for having me on, Craig, and keep in touch. If you want to come back on sometime, then let me know. Always arranged.
Absolutely, Steve. I'd love to speak to you again. I really would. I've got a funny feeling there's a lot more to talk about.
That's just off the cuff, It's just.
It's been fantastic. Thank you so much, and I hope to speak to you again soon.
You're welcome, Craig. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye bye. Take care.
You can visit my website at www.craigbryant.co.uk. Paranormal Pendle will return, and remember to keep watching the shadows.